In the dark, I fed my dream. Permaculture flows like sweet springs. I'm the daddy with the know-how seed. Creating the world like it's meant to be. Permaculture, B-I-O-V, I'm the king. Planting love in everything. Bring a change, making it last.
Welcome to episode 445 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is My Passion. The only pimpcast on this planet that discusses permaculture, preparedness, practical living, and lately a lot of prostitutes.
Permaculture PIMP with Soulful Grace in the Pimpcast, where we find
out. Oh, yeah, good to be here with y'all. Okay, if you're here live in the house, go ahead. Go ahead and hit that thumbs up. Tell everybody we're live so YouTube and everybody else, the powers that shouldn't be, can go ahead and start suppressing us. Because when you talk about anything of a health nature, folks, everybody that's stuck around in this podcast for any period of time knows that I've talked about some off-the-wall stuff. I mean, we've talked about it all right here. I mean, Nephilim tribes, you name it. I mean, all of that's cool, but the second you start talking about how a person might be able to change their health around, now all of a sudden the powers that shouldn't be give you a week's vacation off of YouTube. So look, we're in all the platforms today. So tell everybody we're live and give us a thumbs up. And right off the bat, woof, woof, brother, airborne all the way. Yeah, thank you so much. And thanks for everybody else in the house. Like I said, go ahead and hit that thumbs up. Tell everybody we're live so they can go ahead and start suppressing us. Before we get into it with our guest today, remember, we got the Sovereign Health Summit. That's going to be October 27th through the 31st. Folks, you're going to want to be there. Barbara O'Neill is our chief rock star out there. She's going to be there all 5 days, and she's going to be teaching several times a day. But you know what? What good is a band without a backup singers? So we got a whole lot of them all. You know, we kind of worked them out to where they're kind of supplementing. Barbara's going to be talking about a number of different things. But we brought in specialists that are going to talk about things that she's not hitting but are equally as important. One of them is going to be our top sponsor out there, is going to be Azure Standard, David Seltzer. I had him on the show earlier, not earlier today, but obviously about a month or two ago. Man, I just got back from El Salvador again, y'all, so give me a break. I mean, I'm running at 100 miles an hour. But anyway, I met him at I was speaking at a conference and he was speaking there as well. And when he got off the stage, I was blown away by his story. You know, my wife and I had been Azure customers for quite a while, and there wasn't anybody talking to him. So I'm like, okay, I'll just go up and start, you know, hitting a conversation with this guy and see exactly what he's got. Man, they got stuff laid out all over this table, and I'll be doggone if he didn't know what every single thing was and knew where all of it was sourced. In fact, I hit him up specifically about, I think it was the fish oil. I'm pretty sure it was the fish oil. Man, he's telling me exactly where this stuff came. And I'm thinking, okay, man, I don't know too many CEOs that know chapter and verse of just about every single thing I asked him about. So needless to say, I was thoroughly impressed, y'all. And so, you know, I was already, my wife and I and pretty much everybody we know were already big Azure fans to start with. So that only solidified it for me. And then obviously we wanted them to be one of the rock stars out there at the Sovereign Health Summit. But we're going to be speaking to another rock star right now, my man, H.R. Payne. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Billy. Thanks for having me. Really, really well. Thank you.
Well, as I understand it, you're the vice president of business development at Azure, but also, man, you've worn a lot of hats over the years. So, you know, every superhero has an origin story, bro. Why don't you tell us yours?
Oh, it comes from when I was a baby, deep, deep, deep into the industry. And I think back in those days, came out of college and, you know, you're trying to figure out what you want to do. And right away I found myself in the retail environment of nutritional supplements. I'm not going to go into detail of who that company was. I don't want to really necessarily mention it on, online here, but, you know, so much you learn there. And, after about 5 years of doing that, I got into the manufacturing side, working within the practitioner segment of the dietary supplement channel, manufacturing supplements for about the next 20 plus years. And then Azure came along, brought me out to the farms, and really the rest is history. I've been privileged to be there next to David. You're right. He certainly is hands-on with every, not product, but every ingredient, down to the specs, with how it was processed, all the way to the farm. That there's so much truth behind that statement. He is a very hands-on CEO for sure.
Yeah, he blew my mind in so many different ways. And honestly, hearing his backstory was really astonishing as well. So I'm glad to hear, you know, get a little bit about yours. Look, man, we're talking about a subject that is very, very near and dear to my heart. Mm. I spent thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, and I know a number of others have as well, buying supplements that you later on find out were more polished than spit and more glitter than grit when it came down to what was really in them. So I'd like to know what first opened your eyes to the hidden realities inside this supplement industry. I mean, was there a eureka moment that made you say, okay, I better be taking a second look at this?
Yeah, you know, it becomes very eye-opening once you kind of get a peek behind the curtains there of what's going on in the manufacturing world. And you think that you're getting this beautiful raw material from India, or, you know, you think that it's in its original state, come to find that it is just adulterated with and laced with various excipients. And it's really economical adulteration that occurs within the supply chain. And this, when you say economical adulteration, it's because it's about the dollar. And that's truly what became eye-opening to this industry, that, you know, we all come into this industry and we're hoping to serve people, and we're hoping to help those along their health journey with their specific needs. But to come to find out that, you know, a lot of this industry is purchased within the 7-Elevens, if you will. And so, what I'm talking about is the retail commodities that are out there. And so the supply chain is servicing those mass markets, where it's the accountant that is running the process, right? They're looking to cut corners. And so, unfortunately, with that, there is a lot of, there's a lot of good people, and there's a lot of individuals that are cutting the corners and not doing it necessarily for the right reason.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm wondering, because, I mean, I guess to really encapsulate what you said there, folks, don't buy your CBD at a gas station or any other supplement at a 7-Eleven or anywhere else. I guess what I'm wondering, because strangely enough, as long as I've been doing this, I thought I would have known about this before, but is it true that a large portion of the supplement industry is controlled by a relatively small number of contract manufacturers? I mean, lately I'm hearing that some of the people that make some of the most awful things on this planet are also deeply tied into some of these supplement industries or supplement companies that we think, just because it has nature, whatever, or natural, whatever, we tend not to realize that, you know, the people that we're trying to avoid are absolutely controlling the puppeteer strings. Is that the case?
You know, it's funny. It certainly is. And I think many different levels, and at levels that we don't even realize, and who's really truly driving this industry. Listen, I'm at the same shows and conferences, and I'm within the supply chain looking for raw materials, just like, you know, 90,000 other people at a given conference. And I walk away only with a handful of suppliers that really meet the quality specifications that we require in the manufacturing of a product. I think that the deeper conversation is who is driving this industry. And right away, I think that you're getting to the heart and soul of it. make no mistake, it's not your mom and pop. And when you read between the lines of what that is, there is a term out there that's a widely recognized international term called Codex Alimentarius.
Mm-hmm.
And this is driven by the WHO, the World Health Organization, to make a one uniform harmonizing law across all countries. But who's driving that thought and why? That's the question you have to ask yourself. And so the propaganda behind that, when you dive deeper into the reasons and the whys and the who and is driving this industry and driving this supplement industry, you quickly learn that they're these organizations you're very familiar with, and they are sitting at the board of Codex Alimentarius, making the laws for not just the WHO, not just for the European Union, not for the TG of Australia, but really they are in the trenches of the industry here within the United States, not necessarily the FDA just yet, but they're making their way for sure.
Well, they seem to have, you know, levers of control in just about everything. I mean, when I'm hearing that Bayer and Monsanto and a number of other countries or companies rather are mixed up in this, I'm like, hold on, how is it the people that make poison, or, you know, if you believe the official stories, the ones that made Zyklon B back in World War II are now in charge of our food supply? This is insanity to me that, you know, they've kind of whitewashed everything, and now all of a sudden most people are just completely unaware. I'm certainly not going to trust these people. I mean, I'll give you a prime example of my own story. One of the big wake up moments for me is, in my former life, I was a journeyman electrician, do mostly industrial work. I never truly asked any critical questions about where my food came from until I worked in one of the places that makes the McDonald's hamburger patties. I won't say the name of it, but it was in Oklahoma. Worked in another place where they make dog food. And I've worked in so many different, you name an industry, I've worked there, pharmaceutical. There's a lot of talk about these data centers. I've worked in those. I've talked about that at length on this show. But I've worked in a lot of production facilities, you know, chicken processing, you name it, doing electrical work in all these places. And when you see how the sausage is made, you start asking critical questions about everything else, or at least, you know, a thinking person would. So, you know, I mean, where are we now in terms of, I guess what I want to pin down on you is, of all the supplement industry out there, how much of it do you think, or can you, may not have exact numbers on this, but how much of it do you think is controlled by the powers that shouldn't be, by these massive conglomerates that really couldn't care less if the vitamin C they have in there is actually vitamin C?
Oh, when you break it down, you're in the upper 90 percentile for sure.
That bad? Wow.
And it's not so much the pharmaceutical companies as it used to be that are controlling this. And why are they doing this? That you want to ask, what's the money, of course, right? But is there truly money in all of this? Well, some of the things that they're doing by law does help elevate that thought. But like, for instance, some of the, there's an organization called for Alliances for Natural Health, ANH, and the president of the association who runs it all, founder, Dr. Robert Verkirk, he's phenomenal. I recommend having him on. He's a global expert, specifically in part of our advocacy group here within the United States. He has a chapter here, but he's based out of the UK. And he reveals the why to what they are doing and how they are doing it. And really, when you encapsulate all of that, pun intended, what you get out of it is that they are standardizing the dosages, the potencies that can be allowed within the formulas. You think perhaps, okay, maybe is that a good thing? Well, when you standardize the potencies, number one, you're potentially standardizing the potencies to the point where they don't work. You're standardizing the potencies to where they can do it at a mass production level through only synthetics and isolates. So it is taking away your food chain.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it is poisoning you and how they are doing it. And to the point where it doesn't work any longer. Right. And that's what we need to better understand. But today, it's not just the pharmaceutical groups that you mentioned, it's private equity groups that have now seen the opportunities within the industry. They buy up and then sell out. Right. So they buy up as a potential brand. They see the opportunity within the brand. They put it on a particular trend level where they're operating their EBITDA into the positive. And now once they do that, it's perfectly ripened for a pharmaceutical sale.
Well, this stuff is turning out to be not just ineffective, but could be downright deleterious to health, depending on whom you listen to. This is just plain awful. And man, you just kind of knocked me over when you said in the 90 percentile, good or upper 90s. I would have never guessed that. So, folks, I mean, for all the folks listening out there, I mean, you really ought to be paying attention, because I know a lot of people out there realize just how denuded our soils are, and you think you're getting a good product by going to a certain place only to find out that, you know, it's not what they say it is, and they're getting away with it. So HR, what would surprise, I guess, the average consumer if they saw how supplements were actually made from a lot of these places?
What would surprise them if they saw how they were made?
Yeah. I mean, what would shock people if they saw, I mean, from start to finish, you know, take it any way you like, because I mean, we're dealing in an area where you're a specialist and I'm learning, yeah. You know, from start to finish, how they source their products until the person actually takes it with a glass of water and takes it down. I mean, what is to you the most shocking part of how that's done, that if people knew about it, they would be asking, they'd be saying, okay, I need to go find somebody else.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I think it falls under some of the certifications like that of organic. I'll just say it, rightfully so. We hate to talk about organic, and so many suppliers, so many farmers, so many brands pride themselves in organic, right? And they jump through a lot of hoops to get there. It is not an easy task to get that little organic certification on the label. But then you see that up to 5% of the formula can be laced with these excipients. These excipients that are used in the production process. These excipients that are not just within the production process, that are, you see it where it says other ingredients, right? So you look through the regular formula, says organic turmeric, organic ashwagandha, organic asparagus. I mean, just write down the list there of ingredients, and then it says other ingredients, and you can hold up to 5% of those ingredients. Can be excipients, and excipients are just other ingredients used in the manufacturing process, but they can be talcum powder.
Wow.
Talk about a known carcinogen in Europe, a suspect carcinogen here in the United States. You can use that in the upwards 5% of the overall formula and still call it organic. But better yet, what's even more shocking is once you understand that, okay, now I know what to look for. Well, there can be hidden excipients as well. And these hidden excipients are what even becomes even more concerning, because they're not necessarily up about face on the C of A when you're going through the supply chain and you're understanding every ingredient that you're looking for. They're deep within the master manufacturing record, the MMR is what they call it. And so deep within the MMR, you may see that it's laced with excipients. The raw material itself, the beets, we had beets come in, and the beets, we went deep and we were looking in real deep within the formula and found that it had silicon dioxide in it. I think that every silicon dioxide is sand, right? It's a glorified sand is ultimately what it is. You can use silica, you can use bamboo, you can use some naturally occurring, a little bit more pricey excipients. But this silicon dioxide wasn't on a part of the manufacturing process on the back end. It was deep within the raw material supply.
Wow.
So, and they don't have to necessarily, or they should reveal it. But as long as it's not a player within that can affect the overall health, that they've determined that can affect the overall health of the individual, that's a manufacturing aid, they don't have to list it if it's less than 2%.
This is insane. I mean, this is crazy that folks are actually getting away with it. Folks, we're going to talk about solutions here in a minute, but I got to identify the problem. So I want to cover a couple of more things here before we talk about some of those solutions. Now, everybody, not everybody, but I think most people have heard about greenwashing. And then, of course, there's another thing called science washing. And how much of that, I mean, it's probably something of a rhetorical question, but I got to cover it because I can't expect everybody to know what maybe you and what I know. But how common is that in today's supplement industry?
I think it's pretty common. And brands, I don't know if it's always intentional. The greenwashing that is done in suggesting that your product is a certain type of product. It's at a certain level of production, but you don't do your due diligence on the back end to understand to understand what's gone into the ingredient and the production and the formulation process from beginning to end. And so, there are not everybody's a private equity. Okay. Let's understand that. Not every brand, is a private equity brand. Not every brand is owned by the powers to be, if you will. There are the mom and pops, they just don't represent a majority. And so those brands where that they are hands-on with it, they're privately owned and they're operated like Azure. David felt that a supplement brand, he never set out to do supplements. That wasn't his intention, right? If it's up to him, man, it's all about the food. Like let food be thy medicine. And unfortunately, in this day and age, all the extracurricular factors that we're up against, we need some targeted support. We need some help. And so he realized that over the past several years, and brought myself in to help help really in our team to help create this clean label that we are trying to achieve. But it's not an easy task because it's what you're up against. We want to be clean label. We want to be as green as you can be, but we're not perfect because it's not a perfect industry out there.
Yeah. I get it because, 150 years ago, I'm sure the average everyday person could probably get their recommended daily allowance of, let's say, magnesium just in what they ate every day. But we live in a world where our number one export here in the United States of amnesia is actually soil heading down the Mississippi. Most people don't realize that. So a lot of us are working in are denuded soils. And it's a lot of what we talk about right here in the Permaculture Pimpcast and how you can get this back using biology. So I think you kind of touched on it a little bit before, but I want to drill down a little bit more. But so why does it seem, and maybe my perception is completely wrong, but why does it seem like the supplement industry has shifted more towards isolated synthetic nutrition instead of the real stuff? I mean, I think it's a rhetorical question, but why do you think that?
Yeah, I'd like to write a book on this. If it were up to me, the supplement industry would be 100% within the whole food matrix full spectrum, period. We wouldn't be working with synthetics. We wouldn't be working with isolates. We wouldn't be working with extract. Now, it's not that we don't carry some of these synthetics, isolates, extracts within the product line, right? Because we recognize the therapeutic order of the body, the healing hierarchy systems of the body. Not everybody is on the same level of their healing path. Some need synthetics, some needs more targeted nutrition. But to speak specifically to this industry, it's the science behind this industry and what has been created up to this point has been based upon primarily extracts and synthetics and clinical usage of that, not the full spectrum. Why we ask? Because if it was full spectrum, it would be a food ingredient. Well, there's a whole $70 billion channel that we have to support here. So if it's a food ingredient, oh, there's no money in that. We got to create science behind it using these synthetics, these isolates, and these extracts. When I believe that strongly the science can go back to the food ingredient and get still the same results and even better, without a doubt. And so these extracts, these synthetics, they are what's driving this, what is it, $80 billion industry in the United States today? It's a booming industry. I mean, it's the CAGR of this. I mean, if you take a look at it, it's in the upwards 8-10% year over year. I mean, that's something I'll invest in, right? So yeah, I mean, follow the money. These synthetics, these extracts, these they are outperforming on a financial level the full spectrum whole food matrix of the ingredients themselves. When yet, make no mistake, they potentially can get better, the same results, even better. Just take a look, for instance, vitamin C. Vitamin C. We have practitioners injecting 5,000 units of vitamins, of ascorbic acid, synthetic ascorbic acid in the body. And when you do so, you actually are potentially creating a free radical pathology by doing that. Free radicals, you're damaging the body by using ascorbic acid as synthetic vitamin C. Wait a second, what? When I can use 250, 300, 500 milligrams of full spectrum vitamin C with its polyphenol compounds, the tannins, and all those synergist cofactors and such transporters to get it deeper into the system, and allow it to put it into a media that it can be recycled and not put into those forms, those metabolite forms like the hydroascorbic acid that become a free radical. So that's a little bit deep there as far as an explanation is concerned, but it's really illustrates where this industry has gone and why. I can get the same result with a full spectrum vitamin C and potentially outperform a synthetic 5,000 milligram dosage.
You know, is that a function more of this reductionistic healthcare system that we have, you know, starting all the way back at the Flexner report? Folks, if you don't know about that, you might want to look into it, Abraham Flexner and what he did and the result of it. We have a reductionistic medical system that doesn't ask, why do you have high blood pressure? No, just take this lisinopril, call me in the morning. That's this reductionistic approach to health that we now have here in the United States of Amnesia. And there's a reason why I call it that. This reductionistic approach to health seems to have drifted its way over into this supplement industry. Like you said, I mean, do you think there's a little bit of overlay there, or am I a little too conspiratorial?
Oh, not at all. I mean, it's a quick dollar and there are functional groups out there that are utilizing nutrition in an allopathic manner. And that's kind of what you're speaking about. They're replacing A with A, B with B, C with C, D with D, right down the alphabet, right? And not looking, and when you do that, and you don't look at the body as a whole body phenomena, then you're going to get those very limited results. You're going to think, you're thinking very linear. And it's because it's speed. That's really what it comes down to. You know, it's taken years, decades for our body to become sick, right? But we as a society are used to speed, especially here in America, right? We're used to now. We're used to getting the results tomorrow. And we've been really trained to think that way with pharmaceuticals. And so we expect then the same thing out of nutraceuticals, right? But that's not how nutrition was intended. Nutrition was really intended, food was intended to support and prevent the disease of the body, right? And it does so in many, and I'll say supplements, and I'll be the first to say I represent the supplement world, but supplements are 30% of it. You know, and last time I checked, if all you did is supplements, that means 30%, you're that's a failing grade. I don't see anybody that's ever passed at 30%. So you can't expect supplements to do it alone, you know, in achieving the health status that you hope to and optimizing your health. There's many components to this vitalistic approach. There's many components to the healing hierarchy of the body beyond supplements. But on the same playing field, if you don't do it, you know, you're missing 30%. You need that targeted support in this healing journey. So yes, it's a reductionistic mentality, as you suggested. How we got there, I think it's important to understand. And how the body is approached beyond supplements, it's way beyond supplements. It's a whole body phenomenon. And I think that's the first thing Barbara O'Neill would say as well, right?
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I often talk right here on this podcast about, there are so many people, if you look at the body of work from Barbara O'Neill, they cut and paste the things that are very convenient to them. Like, and we all do it.
That's a great way to put it.
we really do, many of us. But a lot of them are forgetting about that part where she's talking about mobility. Okay, you want to try to get that in. You know, adequate sunlight, you know, avoiding some of the things, the toxic environments, a lot of these things that she talks about. But those are not convenient for most people. And she takes a holistic approach, just like everybody else that's going to be at this thing. It's not, hey, do this one thing and your life's going to change. But you brought up something I thought, I mean, it really knocked my socks off when you said it, is because of the pharmaceutical industry, and myself included, I would definitely include myself in here, that I think to a certain extent that I've been conditioned to expect this. We have this curry in a hurry society where you don't want to cook. Guess what? You got Uber Eats. Well, maybe not where I live, but you know, you got that option, you know, you want something. We have this immediacy that we've just been accustomed to accept and think that that's exactly the way life should be. And, you gave me, I mean, I'm definitely going to be pumped. Thank you very much, HR. You're going to keep me awake tonight thinking about this, because I'm instinctively thinking about all the ways in which my family has changed up things in our lives. And my wife and I think expect a faster result from doing a certain protocol than what should be allowed, because that's not the way it works in nature. And if anybody should know that, it's definitely me. I mean, I work as a permaculture farmer. Nothing happens overnight. So I can't believe that I just totally dismissed the same approach when it comes to human health. So thank you very much for pointing that out. HR, I want to shift a little bit now that we've, I think, adequately described what the problem is. I mean, it's always been my policy on this program to never bring up a problem without providing a couple of solutions to it. So, and that's where you come in. So talk to me. I think we basically realized that, you know, the supplement industry has got a lot of issues in it. But apparently you guys are doing something very different at Azure. So why don't you describe what that process looks like from start to finish, where you source, you know, your ingredients and how it ends up, you know, getting into the homes of everybody out there that orders them.
You know, as a brand, we certainly have a responsibility, I have a responsibility, not just to the customership of Azure, not just to the awareness that we want to create within the industry. I have a responsibility to my kids.
Right on.
I give my kids these supplements, and I gotta look them every time in the eye, and as I give it to them, and knowing what's going into their body and making sure that it's gonna help them. I gotta answer those tough questions later on in life when they ask me, when they hear me on this podcast. So we have to do it differently. And I don't think, Billy, I don't think I quite know how differently just yet we need to do it. Is that a fair statement? It's not a cop-out statement. There's so much that we uncover every day that it's a shock and awe treatment every time I wake up every morning. And where it starts is hands-on with the supply chain. You cannot, make no mistake, you cannot have tribal knowledge where the information is just passed on to you and you accept it. I hope, you know, people that shop with Azure, they don't do that. Billy, you and the customership are some of the most well-informed advocates of the brand that want to know the answer to every question that's out there. And I have to do the same. And I have to be responsible and do the same. And you have to dig and you have to be hands-on with it, deep within, you know, within the supply chain, be not taking anything at face value. You have to, number one, first and foremost, we talk about ourselves as clean label. And I think there's three values in particular that really kind of represent the story of Azure and Azure Well, specifically the supplement brand of Azure Standard. Number one, we want to be as clean label as possible. Clean label is not good enough. And so what is clean label? So if we're representing ourselves as clean label, we have to go identify a new standard of clean. And that's what we're doing. And we had a meeting all about a week and a half ago of redefining our clean label position because it's not good enough. So we are at the face. There's not one person that is making these decisions. We have a team of experts that come from deep within the industry that we have to, number one, they have to be a part of our values process. If they don't want the same outcome, they're in the wrong position. And so, because we're gonna challenge each other radically on every step of the process along the way. So when we define clean, it's looking for things that you've never seen before, perhaps, because they're constantly trying to find new ways to insert it. Anything from painting the turmeric orange to bed stuffing in the reishi. I mean, would you ever expect that just to weigh it down?
Wow.
I mean, these are things I've seen over the years and I've experienced over the years. And so you can't pretend like you know it all or you've seen it all. So clean label number one is representing that every ingredient down to the mount is represented on the label. Nothing is hidden, especially behind that term called proprietary blends. If you see a proprietary blend on a label, pump the brakes. That's put on the magnifying glass, because proprietary blend is suggesting they're doing something to mask. And so every ingredient down to the amount should be represented on the label. Number one, first and foremost. I'm going to come back to that number one, because it's also important to the science. Number two, yeah, look for those excipients. If you see that there's and again, I say excipients, and I generalize that term to meaning toxic excipients, unwanted excipients. I shouldn't do that. Excipients are just additional additives that are used in the manufacturing process. And sometimes there's good excipients, right? But look at those other ingredients and what they are. If they are magnesium stearate, talcum powder, titanium dioxide, if they are non-nutritive ingredients, then I'd stop right there. It's that's just, that can't happen. So clean label, no proprietary blends. Number two, minimize the excipients. Look out for the excipients. Number three, you got to test. You have to test. And testing, you know, the FDA requires testing, believe it or not, and the purity, potency, composition, pathogen, microbiology, and heavy metals. Those are the primary tests in which you are conducting on the botanical. But man, we use way more than five different labs. You go onto the website, you know, we're testing for aflatoxins. I'm finding it difficult, Billy, to use turmeric anymore.
Yeah, a lot of lead.
A lot of aflatoxins.
Wow.
And it's the most carcinogenic spore known to mankind.
Mm-hmm.
I would hate to, you know, put turmeric with my salt palmetto to target my prostate. You know, forget that, right? These aflatoxins are lace, and really, I don't have to test for them. I don't have to. So, residual solvents on extracts, you know, these are the additional tests that you want to perform. And we can go through a whole list here, but these on our website, we identify all the different testing that we're doing, all the different labs with full transparency. You want a company that is going to present the C of A beyond just what they are marking up as the C of A, right? And we're not perfect, because it's not perfect. That's what, and no one can pretend that they are. And so you gotta be, you can't expect every lot to be the same. You gotta test from one to the next. You gotta qualify your suppliers. And not everybody has to be CGMP certified. But man, your quality systems have to be, in order. And we certainly, as a brand, we don't manufacture everything. Let's understand this. There's no manufacturer that does it all, quote unquote, right? We don't have our own boats in the Bering Sea fishing the cod liver oil. We don't have it. We got to rely on a third party. And with that comes gaps. So you have to be hands-on with the quality control process. And we have the best in the world, make no mistake. And they are constantly challenged every day. And so it's those measurements that you have to take, and not just rely on the systems to be, but make sure that you are having checks and balances with that every single day.
Wow. That's blown my mind, because I didn't know you went through that level of extensive testing. I mean, having worked in this area, whether it was food production facilities through Unilever or, Campbell's Soup, you name it. I've worked in all these places. And I got to know them kind of intimately with a lot of the electric work that I did. And the lab, if people only knew the lab that your salad dressing goes through, they would be absolutely floored. They would never use this stuff. If you saw what came in there and what they actually used, you know, I can't point fingers or anything. I don't want to get sued for that. But, man, it's really making me feel even better. I love your products, and I'm loving them even more after what you're telling me. So describe to me what this looks like. So let's say customer A, or let's say a person who wants to work with Azure comes in and says, you know what, I'm growing clean turmeric over here. What does that process look like for you guys to vet them and decide whether or not this is good enough to put on the shelf?
The first step, we make sure it's a conversation, first and foremost. If somebody comes in, we need to have a conversation because it's about a relationship. They need to understand our values. They can't play games with us. I've been called a paranoid. And I'm proud of that. I'll take that one.
Awesome.
And they need to understand that they need to provide that full type of transparency to us, that we are going to identify with the bioactives within it. We're going to do a chromatogram to understand if we are using an extract, that the certain bioactives are actually present, right? And so first and foremost is that conversation to understand that we're in line with values. Number two, and there's that we talk quite a bit. Number two, is we immediately go into a paper audit of their facility. They have to answer the hard questions. And these are steps that there's not a lot of manufacturers that are willing to take those unnecessary steps for manufacturing or for raw material in the approval process, because they don't have to.
Right.
There's 90% of the industry, right, Billy, that will go ahead and buy that. They don't need to waste their time with me.
Mm-hmm.
So it immediately, the supplier qualification audits that we do weed a lot of that out. And so, and we don't rely even on our contract manufacturers to provide it. We want to see it with our own two eyes and ask our own questions and have our own relationship with the raw material suppliers.
How many people actually get past first base? I mean, let's say they say, okay, we got the good stuff. I know that I can get a premium for it if I go to you guys because I'm doing all the right things. Okay, so let's say they get the ball rolling. How many of them actually make it past the muster when it's all said and done?
You got about a 50-50 shot. And you know, on that first phase, there's a number of them, unfortunately, that may be one of the good guys. And they're wildcrafted and they're saying all the right things, but they don't have the regulatory processes in place, in position. And we have to abide by regulation. And so again, it all will be weeded out through, you know, we're the biggest cheerleaders of the mom and pops of the independents, that we want to escort them through. And oftentimes, I mean, we're doing it right now on several levels and with several ingredients. And we're trying to help them through the process. And if they're not organic, you know, we're going to be doing various USP studies on it to see what type, if there's any chemical residues that they're potentially using they haven't hit that organic standard just yet that we're looking for. They're wildcrafted. Okay, we'll take that next step ourselves and actually getting it tested, right? And then we will, you know, we'll help support them during that process. But, you know, there's a small percentage that's able to get through that very first stage. And it's not just about the raw material itself. It's about the CGMP processes that have to be in place by law, because at the end of the day, I can't point the finger if the FDA comes knocking on the door. If the FDA comes knocking on the door, it's our brand that's held responsible, and we got to answer to them.
Gotcha. You know, good night, man. You're blowing me away with all this stuff that I thought I had at least a decent understanding about this. I'm realizing that I'm only just scratching the surface, and I understand why specialists like yourself are absolutely needed and make me sleep a little bit better at night, knowing that in this world where we're covered up with toxicity every time you turn around. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it could be the air you breathe. I mean, with the junk they're dropping from the sky, it could be the exhaust you smelled on the way into work. Even the work environment itself, I mean, things off-gassing in there and all these other things. And to work with folks like you at Azure, just honestly, it just feels like $1 million to me, because I am one of those people that will pay a super premium, you know, because of how we structure our lives and everything around here. I will pay a premium just to know that what I'm getting is what is exactly on that label. And, you know, your diligence and everybody over there, you know, looking to see that these things are what they are, make all the difference in the world for me. HR, I got one more question for you, because, man, I've been wanting to, I see right now that I'm not going to get through half the questions I'd love to ask you. But you said there were one thing you brought here that I didn't know was, hey, when you see proprietary blend, you need to have a red flag. Now, there are certain, I make a deer repellent called Bone Sauce. It's the best in the world. And I don't tell everybody about what's in it, because I spend a lot of time and money figuring this out. So it's proprietary to me. What are some other red flags? If somebody sees it on the label, that they ought to say, okay, I'm going to step back and I'm going to pick up the internet. I'm going to go over there and check out Azure. What are some other red flags?
Yeah. I get it. You know, that it's like your recipe, right? For success, and you want to hold that close to you. That's why trademarks are there, to be honest with you. Those proprietary blends, you know, I was going to come back to that, if you remember, because there is a component of the proprietary blend that delivers the science that's oftentimes missing. The science is super important here, Billy. I think that the whole industry, the consumer of the industry, had been jaded by the snake oil of the past, and where you just don't get the results that is being suggested on the label, right? And so I think that any brand that's over-promising is absolutely under-delivering. And there is a regulatory guidelines that we have to abide by according to the FDA when it comes to the science. If we are going to make a structure function health claim is supporting the body at normal status quo. That's all that a supplement can do. Now, there are mechanistic biochemical, you can talk about the mechanistic biochemical function of how it does that. Right. But we supplements, according to the FDA, can only support the normal status of the structure function of the body. And so when you go beyond that, you're suggesting that it's doing something that the FDA has stated that you cannot do. Automatically, they're crossing those regulatory lines. And you may say, but they're telling you exactly what it does. The science, in order to even detail the structure function of a normal state of the human body with a particular structure function health claim, including its mechanistic value, you have to provide two human studies identifying with the ingredient in that bottle and the amount of that ingredient that's being used within the study. The FDA requires that if you're going to make a simple support or promote structure function claim on the label. And so the studies I can never reveal next to the label, next to on the product page, but I have to be able to demonstrate that if I'm going to make that claim on the label, that there is an ingredient in a study and the amount of that ingredient was represented on the label in the study. Now, if that is the case, that if I'm going to make a structure function health claim based upon an ingredient and the amount of that ingredient, how can I do that with a proprietary blend if the proprietary blend is not identifying with the amounts of those ingredients?
Gotcha.
So my point being is they're not just creating smoky mirrors for you about what they're doing within their manufacturing process by not listing every ingredient, including the amounts. They're creating a smoky mirror to the scientific claims that they're associated with.
Wow, man, this is such a slippery slope, and I'm so glad there are people like yourself out there that so many of us can trust, and you know, that we can outsource. You know, I try not to outsource much, but man, you know, it's so cool that we have people like you over at Azure that are out here sourcing this stuff and making sure it is what it's supposed to be.
It is a team, man. There's no way I can do it by myself. And we brought in the greatest minds in the industry to make this happen. David has, because he mandates that standard.
Now, one last thing. Somebody's going to beat me over the head, I guarantee, if I don't ask this question. But right now, you know, it was big news. I mean, good night. We're covered up with different whatever, you know, bombshell thing every other day these days. But the big thing was glyphosate and how, you know, it's like, you know, it should be listed among the whatever number of vitamins and minerals in your diet, according to the latest people in the White House and, you know, those that work for them. How does Azure screen for that? And how do you prevent it?
It's the glyphosate testing that's being done. We need to identify with on a case by case level and test the ingredient. It is through organic, it's not being tested. And so this has become an initiative of the next rounds of tests.
Did I hear you right? Did you say through organic standards? So the rumor I heard is absolutely true that it's not being tested?
My understanding, and you know, this would have to be, I would have to drill into this even further. I'm not going to say I'm a subject matter expert here with this specific, in this specific area, but within the title of organic, it is not being tested.
That's what I heard. Okay. Wow.
I think there's, I always forget the number, but it's, I want to say USP 456, that the chemical residues, the chemical compounds of glyphosate are not being tested as well. So these are independent tests that need to be identified with. And right at this point, you know, it is not a part of our testing that we perform.
Well, is that going to change in time? Because
it has to. We have to evolve into this. Okay. And it has to. This isn't, oh, well, that's okay. You know, let's just put our head in the sand. It's not happening. No, it's definitely out there. The residues are out there. And make no mistake that this is something that is one of our initiatives upcoming.
Well, HR, I thoroughly appreciate your candor, and I know the audience does as well. I mean, there are many people out there that would just kind of lay it down the line like you did today, but this is exactly why I love what you guys do over there. And, you know, also not that you're just – what I love is that you're not content with the status quo. The status quo says, okay, this is what the standard is, and you guys are saying, no, we think it ought to be bumped up a little bit. It ought to be different, and it ought to be improved. So that much, man, I am so thankful that you guys exist. That's a fact. Is there anything else you'd like to leave with the audience, my man?
No, I appreciate you, Billy, bringing us on and having this conversation. I think it's important to create this type of awareness and continuous improvement on the standard of the industry. It's a great, phenomenal industry that certainly can help a lot of people. And I truly believe that. And it's not as, you know, as much as we have made it out to be as some bad apples, if you will, that are out there. There also are some good ones like Azure and David. So, yeah, we appreciate you.
No, thank you so much. Folks, I hope you, I mean, this was a whole lot to take in, and obviously I'm going to have to leave it right there, but folks, maybe we'll have to get him back on here because I got a whole, my cabase is blowing up right now. I got so many more questions. Till next time, you know the deal. Stay alert, stay alive. I'm grooving with the truth, feeling that just groove. We've got the answers, all we need to do. Listen to the earth, they got us through. Let's see the machine, watch the world spin. From the smallest sprout to harmony begin. In the cycle of life, where the magic's alive. Tune it to the beat, feel the vibe and thrive. So much wisdom.